What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we got a bunch of comic books to review today on The Stack, so we're going to get into it. But first, I want to mention, I always forget to mention this on The Stack, if you want ad-free versions of this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We put ads in here for things like our Patreon, and want to make sure if you want to get it ad-free, go to patreon.com/comicbookclub. You're still going to get this ad I just did, but you won't get other ads. So there you go.
Yeah, that's a free ad, not ad-free.
Exactly.
It's very similar but different.
I felt good about it in the beginning, but now not so much.
Here's the thing about ads, though, Pete. Ads are a lot like bringing different worlds together, like our first book, which is DC Marvel Superman Spider-Man number one from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, Tom King, Christopher Priest, Sean Murphy, Matt Fraction, Jeff Lemire, Greg Rucka, Gail Simone, art by Jorge Jimenez, Jim Lee, Daniel Sempere, Sean Murphy again, Steve Lieber, Rafa Sandoval, Nicola Scott, and Belen Ortega. Woo-hoo. As you can probably figure out from the title, this is once again mashing the worlds of Marvel and DC together. This time very much, for the most part, focusing on the Superman family and the Spider-Man family, with a couple of exceptions here and there. Now, I think the general feeling of the world, and I do think it squares general up with the podcast as well, is that when Marvel came out first with Deadpool, Batman, it was all right. There was some good stuff in it, yeah. But it was okay. And then when DC came out with their Batman, Deadpool, it was pretty great. Now we're getting DC first out of the gate here with Superman, Spider-Man. So does DC keep their high water mark going, or are we looking ahead to Marvel's Spider-Man, Superman to save the day?
DC's up 2-1, I think, from a quality, from just a comic book being released schedule. So they're crushing.
Just the release schedule?
You know what I mean? They have two schedule? Out.
They got two out. Where's Marvel? Where's Marvel,
Where's
bro?
Marvel on this?
Wow. Where's Marvel?
And that's the kind of incisive review that I think people come here for. But let me say, I do think this is excellent. And if I was actually keeping track of books that I thought were excellent, I would say the score is 2-0. So take that. This book is fun. I really like just the general way they're approaching this, where it's not a bunch of screwing around with portals. It's like, these people are just together. It's fine. We don't need to do all of that. And I love that. And having just the reporter, like Peter and Clark as reporters, which we get in the main story and fun. A little bit in other ways, it's just really nice. It's such a satisfying, like, of course thing. And then we get great pairings of other characters later on. We get a Superboy Prime that is very specific about continuity. Spider-Man 2099, which is wild. There's just a lot. And, of course, the Jimmy Con Carnage that we've talked about with Mr. Matt Fraction. A lot of fun here.
Pete, how are you feeling about this one?
Yeah, I think first off, cool cover. Yeah, this is a bunch of really kind
By the way, to describe the cover, it's Superman and Spider-Man.
Yep. Way to be.
Really? Wow. You it really it. Sells it. What's inside? Yeah.
Just saying the title, you know, again. Yep. Oh, just so smart. I can tell the Cornell is really showing there. I thought that this was an amazing kind of bunch of stories here. You know, sometimes you get a mixed bag, but I was impressed with the quality. Art was really kind of next level. Also, you know, in kind of the main story here, you get kind of Lois and a Superman, and you get Peter and MJ. So, you know what I mean? Like, these two couples are power couples and should be kind of, you know, front and center. And, you know, it's nice to see.
There was a lot that I liked in here. I think I wasn't quite as high on this one as the Batman Deadpool issue. I just thought that Grant Morrison story in the front was bananas.
Yeah.
And I love that. That just kind of went for it. This is Mark Waid and Jorge Mendez, a crazy solid team doing just a very earnest, solid, good story about Superman and Spider-Man teaming up against Dr. Octopus and Brainiac. Good. It's great. It's what you want out of a story like that, but it's not quite as transgressive as, say, what Grant Morrison was doing with... You can't do that because, like, Grant Morrison is playing with Deadpool. Mark Waid is playing with Superman and Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah, characters that they're much more familiar with. And here's the thing, though. I think what they did, though, is because Marvel went first with Batman mm-hmm. Deadpool, you come hard with a real hitter on that. Yeah. With a weird story. Here, you're saying, let's just do, like, some great storytelling. Have these steady hands who know the characters more than, like, a wild swing. Makes a lot of sense.
But
just editorially.
Just to kind of finish that thought, Alex, you can't do that on television, but you can do it in a comic book, and I think it was well done.
Fair, very, very fair. We also talked to Tom King about his story with Jim Lee, and I appreciated talking to him about it because it felt like he gave me the proper context, because I was expecting like a Tom King story, like hardcore Tom King story. But he said, no, he was kind of writing it. He didn't use these words, but like as a fuck around to be like, all right, I'm just going to give Jim Lee some crazy stuff to draw. And that's exactly what you get here. There is some fun stuff, but it's not like as insightful as you necessarily expect from him. But I thought, you know, Jim Lee drawing Gambit.
Yeah, come on.
And that was, it was wild.
I'm human.
And, but like, you know, we were anticipating these books for quite some time. And then we get them and now it feels very normal. Like, oh, another one's coming out. But then when you see like Superman and a Sentinel in the same panel, it's like, uh-huh. These guys aren't friends or enemies. They shouldn't even know each other. So, that's cool. I do have one story to talk about, though.
Oh, I have one story I want to talk about that I think was the best one in the issue. I wonder if you're going to call out the same one and say it was not. But
I just thought it was very weird, and I'm talking about Power Girl Punisher.
Yeah,
best one in the issue. Best story in the issue.
Yeah.
Because if you're talking about the weird story, of course you like this one, because I was like, what are we doing?
What a pairing.
Oh, my God.
I loved it.
That was absolutely off the wall. Gail Simone going for it with like deep continuity jokes about absolutely everybody.
Paul.
Getting Punisher to crack a smile, throwing Power Girl and Punisher accidentally on a blind date. And then, this is a big spoiler. I should have mentioned spoiler warning for this whole thing.
Yeah,
but
you should have at the beginning.
The part of the book that I was like, oh, I'm having a very nice time reading this, even in the like crazy dark Jimmy Olsen Carnage story, which we haven't talked too much about, but I thought was went so hard in such a funny way.
Yeah, it was a fun. Yeah, they did a great job.
Like,
with
it. It's them. Yeah, Matt Fraction and Steve Lee were doing it exactly the format they did, my pal, Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen. But yeah, that last story throws it.
let's be clear. Yeah. We are spoiling the end of this. The implication here, at the very last two panels, is that the Power Girl goes and fucks the Punisher.
Yeah!
Are you fucking kidding?
What are you talking about? Why not?
The Punisher, and I'll tell you what, the Punisher War Journal... We've made fun of the Punisher War Journal where he's like, look, I shot all these guys, whatever. I keep a journal. At the end of this, he's like, I'm going to have sex with Bowker. In his little diary. He writes it in his little journal.
Dear Penthouse.
I'm sorry. You're skipping over the part that made me like cackle out loud that I couldn't believe this was happening in DC Marvel Superman Spider-Man. Is Power Girl is there at a bar where the Punisher is at because she's on a blind date with Paul?
Yeah.
Mary Jane's Paul, which
Mary
is
Jane's ex.
Hilarious.
It's great very too funny. Because she's agreed. Like, this dude is not is not is nothing, is a nobody, and I was like, hell yeah. I love this. Ripping
all
on
for
Paul.
That, the idea that Power Girl is like, I really like the way this Punisher guy.
Come on, what are you talking 100%. About?
100%.
No, it was such
the
a
Punisher,
great fit. It was such a well, great fit, I thought.
But also the fact that the Punisher, who I don't think has ever had sex with a woman since his wife died, was like, I don't know.
Point to a time when the Punisher was flirting. He's holding a cup of coffee in the bar in this scene. And I've never even seen him enjoy a cup of anything. He's smiling. And then
it's
there,
the thing that's probably throwing you, I think, Justin, is the fact that Tom King's having, you know, fun with the story he's doing with Jim Lee. But mostly there's like, wow, what if Uncle Ben met Pa Kent or like, oh, we're really going to explore these relationships and see what these characters are like from different universes. And Gail Simone is like, what if Power Girl fucked the Punisher?
I think it's funny. I like it. I wish there was more stories like this. Yeah. I just think of the idea that they fly. She picks up the Punisher and they fly off to an apartment. And he's later writing in his journal, which is mostly about guns and killing people. And then he has an entry where he's like, hey, I had intimate romantic lovemaking sex with Power Girl. He's writing that in the war journal. Okay, Punisher. That's what we're doing.
I guess it's a sex journal now.
Why are you hating, bro? I think it's great.
I'm not hating. I love it. But now my perception of the Punisher is forever changed. I want his journal to be gunpowder scented, but also have curly Q hearts in it, because that's the kind of guy that he is.
Also, shout out to Belen Ortega on the art here, which was just a perfect match for the story. I thought it was great. I loved it. More of that, please.
It was fun.
Maybe not more of this plot line, but more like that. Like, just go for it. Go crazy. You're jamming two universes. We don't need to be careful about this. Like, have a little fun. Anyway.
No, it's very fun.
Ultimate Endgame, number 3 from Marvel, written by Dennis Kapp, art by Jonas Scharf, Terry, and Rachel Dodson. Oh boy, it's really come down to it here in the Ultimate Endgame, as our folks trapped inside the Maker's bubble are fighting a bunch of goop, and outside, everybody is not fighting goop. No, they are also fighting goop. I don't know. There's a lot going on here.
Great, cool cover.
This is a little frustrating for me. I'm finding this event a little frustrating because I like Dennis Kapp. I like the Dodsons. There's a big thing that happens in this issue.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is muted by the way the plot is rolling out. And perhaps it's still my expectations of this being like, we are ending the universe with this series. We are getting the big climactic action scenes and moments in Dennis Kapp's The Ultimates. That's where we're getting it. Here, this is all a lot more intimate, and it's not giving me that big event finale feel.
Yeah, it feels like a little rushed and a little messy, weirdly. Mm-hmm. And like, I like the idea that they have two different artists doing inside the bubble, outside the bubble. That's a cool idea. But it's not really working, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say that. I'm in the Dennis camp, but this is the first time I'm like starting to get a little chilly in the camp.
You're a head camper, bro. This is
I know there's a mosquito in my tent, and there's something swatting around. I don't like the last 3 pages. I did not like. Ooh. I don't like what happened here. And I feel like...
You don't like how it happened, or you don't like what happened, or...
I don't like both, technically, but especially from a storytelling perspective, I don't like how it happened. Mm-hmm. And it's also just, it feels especially strange. The whole Ultimate Universe was, as up until Endgame, was like a Swiss watch. It was so tightly composed and, like, time-dependent and, like, very meticulously played out, or at least that's what it felt like. And yes, it started to get a little loose in the last couple issues before we got here. This feels like the opposite. This feels like a throw it all in the room crossover where we're just trying to, we have to get this done in four issues or whatever.
Well, let me throw out to you a moment that I think exemplifies exactly what you're talking about, which is the Ultimate X-Men characters are here for some reason. They are trying to track down their missing team member who got lost towards the end of the run. And they're like, oh, maybe she's over there. I saw a glow that looks like her, which is very thin reason for being there. You're following them. They're doing some stuff. The action is just not clear. But then Killmonger comes in and wrecks some dudes. And they're like, oh, cool, it's Killmonger. And that, to me, I was like, yeah, that is cool. This is a cool shot of Killmonger that the Dodsons are doing. It's fun to see them freaking out about Killmonger and asking whether Storm's there and, like, fanboying out and whatever. Very fun. To have that stuff back-to-back where, like, I don't know why they're here. Also, I enjoyed this moment. It shows sort of, like, this juxtaposition of these two things that are, like, jamming against each other, not quite working in this series.
I think... Yeah. We can all agree, though, that the art was phenomenal. I really loved the Killmonger stuff. And I, you know, if we don't want to spoil it, that's fine. But yeah, I can see why you were upset about what went down. It was kind of crazy.
Well, let's talk about it. I will also say this is, I'm not trying to insult anybody personally. Jonah Scharf's art just does not work for me. It does not feel like big event art. I would want to read him on potentially another book, but like, It's not giving me that epic scope. It's like a little too intimate and small. But the thing that happens at the end, and this is a big spoiler warning here, is Spider-Man dies.
Yeah.
It's rather perfunctory the way that he dies. He's not. There's a cool moment where his suit turns into carnage, which is fun. Yeah, I guess.
Sort of. I guess I just feel like I've seen enough Carnage right now. And like I like the Carnage stuff in the main universe. So when it happened here, I was like, God, this is the one thing I am already seeing of Spider-Man. Like, I was just surprised at it.
The thing that I was struck by is like, I expected a bigger ending from Ultimate Spider-Man, the book.
Right.
And if there had been a sacrifice by this sacrifice or this sort of sacrifice from Peter Parker in his book, followed by a note saying goodbye to Mary Jane, that would have been more impactful to me than him semi-randomly dying in the third issue. There's time travel involved. There's characters jumping all over the place. So there's every chance to bring him back or figure something else out. Or this isn't exactly what we think it is. But I agree with you. It just sort of happened. And I was like, huh.
I will say, reading this issue, one of my takeaways was, oh, I think the Ultimate Universe is ending. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're like, yeah, we're done with this. They've made me feel that way. So I'm like, oh, well, I guess they are telling the truth.
What a bummer.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we move on to something that maybe isn't a bummer. Absolute Wonder Woman, number 18 for DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman. In this issue, we're continuing the arc of the Absolute Suicide Squad attacking Wonder Woman. She is on the run, and this issue, Zatanna turns sides and helps her out a little bit, and maybe strikes up a little bit of a flirtation with her. I'm just going to throw that out there. Seems like that's what was going on in the issue, but we also find out that the walking fiery skeleton who is fighting her is, in fact, Zatanna's father. And more things are going on. Pete, I know you're a big fan of this, so what do you think?
Yeah, first off, cool cover. Another great issue of Absolute Wonder Woman. It just continues to be a real blast. Wonder Woman really goes through it, you know, loses her arm. And, you know, she's such a badass, man. That doesn't even slow her down, you know. I was like, man. But yeah, love the Zatanna stuff, fun father kind of conflict that we're getting here. So yeah, I'm excited to see where this is going. They do such a great job of like moving forward in each issue and getting you excited for more. So yeah, I've been loving this.
Which arm would you want to lose if you had to choose?
Well, since I'm right-handed, I'm going to go left.
See, I would lose the main one. Try it out.
Wow, that's hardcore, bro. That's fucking hardcore.
Anybody can do the easy thing and lose the boring old other hand. I'm going to go the hard way.
Boring old other hand?
Yeah.
I don't like the way you talk to your other hand, bro. It's, that's, you know what I mean? It's heartbreaking.
I'm being rude to the my main hand.
You gotta love them both. You know what
don't,
I mean?
Don't talk.
You
to
gotta love because, both your hands, says yeah. Pete LePage. You gotta love both your hands.
This is a gorgeous book. Absolutely beautiful. Great every single issue.
Love this book. This particular arc has really gone out of its way to feature Zatanna and make Zatanna's cool, make Zatanna look cool. The characters are even like, man, that girl is really awesome. Like, they're really building her into something. So I wonder if that is intentional. But the baseline Wonder Woman story, we get a couple great scenes of her just on the Wild Isle. And every time we go there, it feels so pointed, poignant, and just beautifully drawn. It's just great.
Yeah. Feral, number 21 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Trish Forstner and Tony Rodriguez. Tony Fleece talked to us about this issue a couple of weeks back on the podcast. Go give it a listen. But since this is the 21st issue, it is a tribute to the classic G.I. Joe silent interlude issue, but with cats. Again, I want to give a big spoiler warning here because there's a wild thing that happens towards the end of the issue, but most of it is silent as our cats have been taken to a makeshift CDC facility, and one who is hearing impaired escapes and tries to make his way out, leading to a surprising revelation at the end of the issue. What'd you guys think?
Well, first off, this was very enjoyable. I love the homage. It really felt like an old kind of Storm Shadow Snake Eyes kind of homage here. So I really appreciated that. Also, I was disappointed we got words because I was like, oh, this is going to be the silent issue. But it's like almost fully silent. You know, the last couple of panels.
Because there was a little talking right at the end.
Yeah, there was a little talking at the end. I was going, oh, boo, words. You really ruin it.
I think those words were well placed. There's also signs, which are words for your eyes.
Yeah, but you can let that slide. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought this was great. I think it's really funny that they're set, like the above the title words here are silent interlude. Like it's being sold as a silent interlude. Mm-hmm. And I think I didn't know people would be like, oh, sick. But yeah, I guess like it works on Pete. Yeah. The other thing I want to highlight in the art is the amazing use of depth in this. I feel
dude,
because there was more space without word balloons, they really went out of the way to set things back in the frame. There's a real foreground background, which you don't always get. A very active foreground and background. You don't always get that in comics. And this issue just feels like it really made an effort to let us fall into the world a bit.
Yeah.
And then, okay.
Sorry, just to kind of heighten what you're saying. Yeah, the putting the fucking art first and to kind of really letting the artists flex a little bit on what they can do with the panels. And yeah, great job of talking about not only the depth, but also just the different kind of tone the story taking can have when it's all art led. And I just feel like it's such a nice thing every once in a while, and just so great for an artist to be able to kind of tell a story.
What'd you guys think about the end of the issue?
I thought it was awesome. I love this thing that happened.
Yeah. I love that if you read, I know we're not actually mentioning what the spoiler is, but this is the first part of an arc, and they don't reveal what the title of the arc is until the letters page, I think, is where the reveal it is, which very fun. So if you are a fan of Tony Fleece and Trish Forstner's work and their previous work, definitely pick up this issue if you haven't seen King of Feral, whatever that may be.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. If you like this series or another series they worked on, equally, you will love this issue.
I'm sneaky. Wolverine.
Yeah, oh, really sneaky. You should do trailers. Did you do the trailer for Project Hail Mary? Because, man, was that subtle about revealing what happens in that movie.
Yep. Thank you. I worked very hard on that, me and Ryan.
There's a world of opportunity out there, beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part? comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Prenuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Prenuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Wolverine Weapons of Armageddon number 2 from Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Luca Maresca. We are continuing the countdown to Armageddon, the big summer event from Marvel. Here, Wolverine is trying to track down a mutant who's been given even more extreme claws, if you can believe that. And he's teaming up with a Captain America who is even more extreme against another Captain America who's even more extreme, who's also kind of a Wolverine.
What?
There it is. That's the audible representation of it.
What's upsetting is, you know, with all that, it feels like this would be an exciting, crazy issue, but there was a lot of just talking heads, a lot of sitting around and talking, and it was kind of driving me nuts. But I do like where we kind of got, and, you know, the Duke Nukem character is like a good character that I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to see this guy die. So it's always fun to see that character because I'm like, man, I hope they kill them, or at least I know this is like going to be kind of a fun situation.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, Pete. The only I have a thing against Nuke as a character for some reason. Like, Nuke is treated like he presents as like the most henchman of henchmen.
Right.
He feels like a big pile of meat who's like, how do you know I'm American? I get a fucking flag on my face.
That's right.
And when he's like the main villain, like doing stuff, I'm like, this guy's not doing stuff. He's a slab. And that's my own bias. So I just want to put that out there.
Okay, I appreciate you sharing that.
I'd like the idea of Wolverine at the center of this sort of espionage, superhero espionage type story. Mm-hmm. And they're like, this cover's excellent. I feel like that's what we're getting. It does end up, and I like talking, it does end up feel like a lot of a chattier issue than I expected.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I, for whatever reason, like this one better than the first one. And I do think that's because we were getting into the meat of the characters a little bit more. Like, a lot of this is reviewing Nuke's origin story in particular and showing how it ties into Wolverine. It's reminding us who David Coulton is, if you haven't been reading Captain America. So a lot of this is, hey, do you know this guy? They're going to be important for the Armageddon event. Get up to speed on them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like the character work here. This is very much Chip Zdarsky in serious mode, but Luca Maresca's art is very solid
Great.
So I don't know. I'm still iffy on this whole thing because I just don't know what it is. But
yeah,
that's not a fair thing to put on the book, except I also don't know what this book is, you know? So, and we're halfway through.
The art I'm starting to think it was reminding me a little bit of like maybe laying the groundwork for something like Lazarus, the Greg Rucka series, where there's going to be a lot of different factions with their own cap that are going to be these like WMDs that are going to go fight each other. And so it has that like espionage, nations, there are different factions fighting, betraying each other. Wow, we're just going to have see different Captain Americas just beating the shit out of each other.
I think there's that, but I'll throw out there, I'm still sticking with my theory that what Armageddon is going to be about, we know that Red Hulk takes over Latveria and everybody's fighting against him, but I think what's actually going to happen is David Coulton is going to get an origin box, get awesomely superpowered, and all the stuff he's talking about at this issue where he's like, I'm really frustrated about the state of America, will be like, well, I can do it. I can do it to the entire world. So yeah, he's going to basically like out Red Hulk, and
wait,
wreck
but here's
everything.
The thing. We can't do another like One World Under Doom type story.
Nah, it's just like,
just did wait, that. So that's why I think it's going to be very factional.
This like, isn't going to be a meteor is coming to Earth and we got to get the best miner and the most badass person to be an astronaut?
They're oil drillers, Pete, first of all, not miners. You're thinking of Lord of the Rings, I believe, where they're no. with the dwarves. Different movie.
Who do you think's going to do the sexy animal crackers down the pants?
Oh, man, the little
universe?
Pillow talk amount.
Definitely Deadpool. Definitely yeah. Deadpool. To himself, probably.
Nothing yeah. sexier than animal crackers.
I don't want to close my eyes. Flash, 31 from DC Flash. Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Gavin Guidry. We had the team on this week on the live show, so did listen we? To that interview about this very title. We already talked about it a lot there, but it is a back-to-basics approach for The Flash for Wally West, recentering him with his family before sending him off on various adventures, and I thought this was neat. But also, I'm in the tank for The Flash,
yeah,
so I'd love to hear from you guys
tanker.
Who have been back and forth about the character over time.
Yeah, Alex is a tanker stuck in the Strait of Hormuz enjoying the Flash book.
Oh, man.
Just like me, because I really enjoyed this as well. I also love the Flash, but especially when we get a take that's very simple, pure, leaning into the fun. The Flash, I feel like over the last like 5 years has just been a wild mix of different ideas. I really liked the one from a couple years ago that was about sort of like failure. It was like this much darker, more like a weirder take that was really good. And then we've been doing some impulse stuff lately. This feels like just a nice breath of fresh air in the whole series. So very much enjoyed this.
Yeah, agreed. The art is fantastic. This is a really fun kind of take and fun look. And I liked all the family stuff. So I'm not normally a Flash fan, but yeah, I enjoyed this.
Yeah, and Gavin's art is just great. Like, it's the perfect mix for match for what Ryan is doing on the writing. So, really good book. If you've been off The Flash at all, definitely pick up this
Plus,
issue.
Plus, he's an interesting fellow.
He is an interesting fellow.
Gavin?
Yeah.
That's
at
nice.
The Flash as well. A good day to you, sir. Void Rivals, number 28 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Andrzej Bressan. Now, last
and time for
issue,
a quick recap from Alex about what's going on in this comic.
Well, I was
going
to say, last issue, I believe we challenged Pete to explain what's going on in this book, and I'm just going to renew that challenge because I don't feel like you properly did with the last issue. This issue, though, I'm sure you can. Just real quick, what's going on here?
Okay, great. Yeah. First off, I love this fun cover. Love seeing
Is it?
The ships from Cobra.
What is happening on the cover? And this is not me challenging
you. This is the Tribunal, and then you got the Sharkticons underneath. And Tribunal's got some, like, badass shades on and some kind of, like, tentacle arms with either a knife blade or some kind of pinchers. So,
wow.
I
Really?
I
real enjoyed, command of this cover, Pete. Nice.
Enjoyed it? Yeah, I also, you know, a sucker for Sharkticons. The Tribunal's fun. Yeah, just great art, action. And then, you know, I love me some Talk to the Handroids, the letters page, back matter is great. This is a solid comic.
I like that you described the cover and then the letters page. That is the part that makes the most sense.
Yeah, I shouted out that I like the ships from the Cobra Law stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. I got to say, I thought the art in this issue was excellent. And I really liked there were a lot of different perspectives we see in this, which was very cool. And I was sort of letting this wash over me a little bit and enjoyed this issue more than the recent ones.
Hey.
I felt like
I
We're
a question
getting some
for you
big
guys.
Sci-fi battle.
The cover here that I'm looking at is a little blurry, so I can't tell. This is the Quintessence War. Is that part 4 of 16? Or how many parts is that? 8?
6, I think.
Okay, all right. Whew. All right.
You worried?
I was worried
that we had another 12 parts to go of whatever is happening here.
You're upset about it? You don't want to go for 12 parts?
Alex, there's going to be a lot of echoes of the Quintessence War as well, so don't worry about the after smash.
Oh, okay. All right, great.
You're just mad because your boy's not in this one.
Sucksoid? Yeah. I am mad there is no Sucksoid. Yeah, that is my main criticism of this issue, for sure. But that's also my criticism of every comic. Every comic that does not have Sucksoid, I'm mad about.
Yeah. You do say that in a lot of reviews where it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Next up, Fantastic Four First Foes, number one from Marvel, written by Dan Slott and Ryan North, art by Mark Buckingham and Phil Noto. This is set in the MCU continuity, spinning off of the First Steps book that Matt Fraction and Mark Buckingham did. Here, we're diving into the Mad Thinker, a villain that wasn't fleshed out really at all in the movie. In fact, we didn't even see him there. And instead, we're finding out how his origin ties into the origin of the Fantastic Four. And I got to say, no Sucksoid, this book sucks.
Oh, man. Man, you took away the first thing I was going to say. I don't think this sucks. I did think the Mad Thinker thing was kind of fun. I was a little like, this would make more sense to me, at least, if this was more tied into when the movie came out. But it's fun to kind of see this version of Fantastic Four, you know. Let's just go a movie version. I think that's a fun thing to do. And, yeah, I like the art.
What did it feel like to revisit? I haven't thought about this movie in a while. What did it feel like to re-enter this world? Are you like, yes, a timeless classic?
No, I mean, I wasn't that huge of a fan of the movie. But I don't know. I was like, you get it. You look at the cover, you go, okay, great. Movie Fantastic Four. I know we're jumping
into
it.
I'm not asking if it's gettable. Okay. I'm more the feeling. It's definitely gettable. I know what's happening.
Okay.
I guess to answer my own question, I felt, I was like, the feeling was strange. It was a foreign feeling. Like this movie has faded.
Like Fantastic foreign feeling?
I agree with you on that. So what I pivoted to is the fact that I like Dan Slott writing a fun Fantastic Four story, and Mark Buckingham is great on art. There's also a really fun two-pager at the end from Ryan North and
Phil Noto. Yes, love the two-pager.
Very funny. So I hear what you're saying. This feels like I'm not 100% sure why we are doing this.
I'm not even saying that. Like, I like the story. I thought this was a great issue. Like, it's just a great Dan Slott. The Fantastic Four are in it, but this is like a Mad Thinker story. Yeah. And, like, starting with him being the great thinker and seeing him sort of fall, I thought it was great. It was just more like the sense memory of the Fantastic Four movie was sort of like, oh, yeah, right.
It did make me feel like I wish they had been doing more things like this all along with the MCU. You know, which they have had MCU comics, but they've always felt even more superfluous than this, where they're like, oh, we're not even really filling in events. It's just people being like, hey, remember what happened off screen with this thing? When they could have been doing things that tied into the MCU all along, that didn't conflict other things, that fleshed out moments in bigger ways. So I don't know. Maybe part of it is that this feels a little late. If they had been doing this for the past 10 to 15 years, we might be feeling different about this comic.
Okay.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know, man. Absolute Martian Manhunter, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Dennis Camp, art by Javier Rodriguez. Justin, are you back in the camp?
Yeah.
After getting chilly in camp?
You camping again?
This comics continues to be excellent. It's like sitting and trying to remember when you were on psychedelic mushrooms.
Ooh.
The way it's laid out and everything, it is the most like memory of doing drugs comic out there. And there are a lot of comics that do that. But it's great. The art's great. The story is really interesting. The way we end up with John having more than one Martian riding with him is really interesting. The metaphor and symbolism is really fun here.
Yeah, first off, crazy cool cover. I don't know what is kind of real and what is not, but man, the colors, just the panels, the page layouts, it's so art forward and so kind of like tripped out and wild and beautiful. Just so amazing, the panels. I love this art so much.
Gorgeous book, great writing, tripped out like you guys are saying. Universal Monsters, The Phantom of the Opera number 2 from Skybound and Image Comics.
Gloriously restored. Pantages Theater. Sorry.
Written by Tyler Boss, art by Martin Simmons. In this issue, the Phantom continues to attack Christine. Period.
You know, we have a lot of ongoing, like, runners in this show.
Phantom by phone.
The hardest one for anyone to understand is when Pete and I shout a commercial from upstate New York in the early 90s about a theater in Toronto that was showing Phantom of the Opera for a while. Is that the weirdest one? Like,
it seems like our entire childhood. It was always on and always running.
Honestly, like, I can't think of the Phantom of the Opera without thinking of this commercial.
I agree.
By Phantom, by foe. And the see the show in the gloriously restored Pantages Theater. Yeah. But this comic book
can
is
I just
not
point
that.
Out that this commercial is so old that the tagline was, hey, great news, you can buy theater tickets over the phone now.
Yes. Like, we're not denying.
Phone. We just introduced this.
Yeah. I've called you old so many times, Alex, and we are being so old here. We're talking. We may as well be being like, I love to do the Charleston of the sock hop with my sweetest one. And here we are just continuing to do it. This comic, though, is – I am enjoying this. You know, I hate to invoke this, but it reminded me of like 80s Sandman.
Ooh.
Like that type of like very literature feeling story with like Dave McKean-esque art where it's very dramatic. There's a lot of like running around and surprise violence. Like I did enjoy it, and it felt like it's rare to see that very particular flavor of comics than what we saw here.
Yeah, I had a real weird moment with this comic, besides the flashbacks to all the amazing commercials of my youth. But the fact that Phantom was like, you know, I thought he was kind of like he would pair up with an actress and torture them and it would be a real important relationship. And this issue, he's just like, you're dead to me. And then he moves on to another actress. And I was like, Phantom, what the fuck? Oh, my God, that's
Phantom,
crazy.
Phantom, I thought you loved her.
I thought you loved her. I thought this was your one true, you know, whatever you're trying to recreate. The fact that it's like, next actress, please. Do you have a headshot and resume? Let me see your references.
Hey, that's the biz.
I was like, God damn, Phantom, that's cold as shit.
Yeah, he's like by romantic partners by phone. Am I right, Pete? You know what I'm talking about? The gloriously restored Phantom of the Opera romance story?
Oh, man. Yeah.
But the real answer, though, I think, is this isn't based on the musical. This is based on the original, like, gothic horror story where it was just a dude that killed girls.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, in the first one, I was like, why aren't they at a theater? I want this to be more like the Phantom of the Opera I know. And then we got this in this issue, and I was very excited about that. And I do agree that the art is very dramatic and powerful. But also, like, at some points, it's, like, so beautiful I can't tell what's happening. If that makes sense. But then, I also keep trying to make it more like the opera that I know and love. So there's a lot going on in this comic.
Yeah. You, unlike Timothy Chalamet, you love opera and ballet.
That's right. That's true. Yeah. Facts.
The Amazing Spider-Man, number 25 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Ed McGuinness. This continues the Death Spiral storyline as Venom, Mary Jane, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and Eddie Brock Carnage are teaming up to take down Torment, or at least not initially, because Carnage really wants to take over Torment and team up with him, have a Torment team up, if you will. I've been loving this crossover so far. What do you guys think about this issue?
I like this. This is really Joe Kelly's one is really growing on me. I'm also a little bit in my head about the interview we did with him because I asked him about MJ and how he feels about that relationship. But I think what I should have asked him is how he feels about love and, you know, the one true.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? But anyways, this is great. The kind of team up that happens here with all the kind of like, you know, venom, carnage, anti-venom is cool. I like this kind of getting them all on the same page, which is a great idea. And I feel like feels like maybe it wouldn't make sense on paper, but they're really pulling it off in a great way. So, yeah, I'm impressed with what's going on. The only thing that I have is the spiral, or as I like to call him, bikini bottom, because that kind of thing he has in his chest really throws me off. It just looks like he has a loose bikini bottom on the front of his uniform or costume.
Talking about Torment?
Yeah, the spiral guy.
Huh, nice.
All right.
Pete, really thinking about beach season. I also enjoy this. Ed McGinnick's really establishing himself as this generation's Mark Bagley. Mm. Like, just doing really great comic book storytelling with pop-out moments when Shocker shoots Venom off of Mary Jane and she's sort of hovering in space. I thought that was really cool. Or Torment with the Shocker gloves. I did find perhaps an alarming clue for what's going to happen with romance in this comic. Mary Jane, you know who she's going to be dating? Flash Thompson.
No, mm-hmm. No. Because they...
It was hinted in the previous issue.
No, yeah. Listen. I'm trying not to lose my shit here because in
not succeeding.
I know. But in this issue, I felt like that, you know, like I got to calm down. But in this issue, you know, Venom's like, hey, your pheromones are spiking. And she gets really nervous about it. But I thought she was they were talking about Peter Parker.
No.
I have a horrible news.
When she was talking about Flash.
No.
Literally, someone just mentioned that they might see Flash, pheromone spike.
No.
Venom, don't lie.
No.
Venom is wing womaning so hard.
I read that, and I guess I have my Peter MJ blinders on, and I was like, oh, he's talking about Peter Parker.
Yeah.
MJ to Flash Thompson is Power Girl to his Punisher.
Oh, God damn
you know
it.
What I mean? Yeah. Oh, now I'm confused. I do think that's such an interesting turn. And if the super story that we're telling is that eventually Peter and MJ will get back together, and I'm not convinced of that anymore, I think this is a step you could maybe believe, Pete, if you need something to stop you from crying into your pillow. I think you can take that home with you, that this is a great step forward to a love triangle, or like a love triangle right out of the past.
By the way, to take a big step back, it's crazy to me, Pete, that you didn't say anything about Spider-Man dying and Mary Jane feeling it happen all the way in the Savage Land over in Ultimate Endgame.
Yeah.
That's not his MJ.
I agree that was...
Well, yeah, why don't you feel... Because that's just Ultimate MJ.
Yeah, that's the Ultimate is doesn't count. That's very clear.
Count. I have some bad news for you about all of this, Pete.
Yeah, I'll tell you what counts, this issue, this Flash Thompson relationship.
Superman number 36 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. With Superman missing, Superboy Prime has stepped in to help Metropolis, and he is grappling with whether he is a hero or not, whether everybody treats him as a hero or not, as he tries very hard to integrate himself into a new life of his own without Lois Lane's help. It doesn't go quite according to plan. Justin, I'm curious to hear from you because you've been a little back and forth about Superboy Prime. I will say I enjoy the character. I think Joshua Williamson is having a blast with him, and I'm really curious to see what he does over the course of this redemption arc. But how are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, in the past, I haven't really enjoyed like the meta nature of the character. Feels like he's always just being like very snarky, very like Deadpool, except... It's just he's just madder and more like important to the overall continuity for whatever reason. This I actually am enjoying more. It does feel like Joshua Williamson has found just a more a clear path for him. Like, and him trying to be Superman rather than trying to kill Superman is much better just from a storytelling perspective. One thing about the beginning of this issue, we have Lois being tested and they're like, yeah, your powers are gone again. They were gone. You had them. And then they were gone. And then you had them again. And they're gone again. And I'm like, what are we doing here? What's the deal here?
Well, there is a bigger story that he's been building up, he being Joshua Williamson in the background. We don't know what's going on with Zod. And I believe, if I remember correctly,
Superwoman's powers went to Zod.
Yes. But then she got them back and they didn't explain. And we never found out why.
So there's something they're building up to here. And I think we're just not quite there yet.
Yeah, I'm very curious because I've actually really enjoyed having a superpowered Lois. It's been made for some nice stories. So I wouldn't mind having it back, I guess.
Yeah, Prime gives a kind of like a pep talk at the beginning of this, and then it gets real meta, and like you said, that it kind of pulls me out of it a little bit. But fun last panel. Yeah, there was kind of some fun where, like, there's a picture of Batman on the wall from a comic shop, and then someone said, "You can't read comics all day," and I was like, "Oh, come on, then. I'm literally reading comics all day, and you're fucking with me." So that was a little upsetting, a little shot in the nuts there. But, you know, amazing art.
Wiccan Witch's Road, number 4 from Marvel, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Andy Pereira. Wiccan is trying to gather some magical items to get his powers back and turn his husband into not a puppet. Meanwhile, there are some forces aligning against him and some forces aligning behind him at the same time. The series has been a lot of fun with some really beautiful art, and I think that continues this issue. But what about you guys? How do you feel?
Yeah, I agree. This is really fun. Love the art and the action. It's a great story. The mom hug was very touching and nice. Mm. Yeah, I thought this was very enjoyable. I love this team.
Wanda really the guest star of the year so far in Marvel Comics, I feel like. That lady pops up all the time. It makes a lot of sense here. Yeah. I do enjoy this. I like the way that this comic specifically has done their, like, guest stars has been good. We get Speed showing up. It's a nice mix of fun with some high drama as well.
Hyde Street, number 11 from Ghost Machine at Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Ivan Rice. We are meeting a new character, or we met him the last issue, but continuing to explore it a little bit. The Butcher of Hyde Street, as we also jump to an alternate reality, I guess you can call it, where we follow Pranky, among other things. Lots of spookity-doo, as usual, on the old Hyde Street.
Spookity-doo. Oh, my God. Who are you?
But what I liked about this is we're getting into, like, a larger story. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been slow playing. This felt like a very, like, pretty clean anthology series for a while. Mm-hmm. Then we started to get some, like, rivalry between our narrators. And then the narrators took center stage. And now it's sort of like the bigger story's coming home to roost here. And I actually like that move. It feels, like, very well paced for something like this.
Yeah, I agree. There is some moving on the chessboard here, but it's done so well you don't mind it. Yeah, just really love the art style. Continues to be such a kind of twisted and interesting tale. Yeah, you can tell it's in great hands and it's well taken care of. And fun merch in the back, you know, the Creature Crisp t-shirt. It keeps calling my name. One of these days I'm going to have to pull the trigger on that.
Dungeons of Doom, number 3 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy and Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Carlo Magno, George Gianti, Justin Mason, Robert Gill, and Carl Story. We are wrapping things up here as various factions are exploring the Dungeons of Doom and dying in horrible ways, and some of them turning into horrible things that may mean bad things for the Marvel Universe going forward. I've been really enjoying the series. I would have loved to have seen even more of this and for this to keep going. But what about you all?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Go, you can go.
Yeah, I do think this is just a fun collection of stories. You got Ghost Doom in there, which is fun. Just the twists and turns of this is great. I enjoyed this, or continue to enjoy this.
I just love the way the Philip Kennedy Johnson has just been doing so much great horror, and like it. This is, we get more of that here. At the back end of this, we get just a nod that there's going to be some characters that he created coming back, and it feels like he's just literally carving out his own little, with a jagged piece of metal, his own little part of the Marvel Universe, and that's awesome.
Green Lantern number 33 from DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, Ron Mars, art by Zermanico, V. Ken Marion, Dan Jurgens, and Daryl Banks. This is also the 600th issue of Green Lantern, so we're getting some look backs to the origins of Hal Jordan and Kyle Rayner, as well as some look forwards and look right here's. That's what I call presents. Right,
yeah, presents. That's presents. That's what you say. No, I want to be more in the look. I want to live in more in the look right here's.
The looky loos.
What do you think about like the fad of like returning to legacy numbering and then going back for a number one? It feels like we've all gotten rid of all that. Now it's just like, let's just do regular numbers. When I thought that was here to stay.
Wait, what do you mean?
Switching, like calling this, like now this is issue 600.
They're very loosey-goosey with it across the board. Like,
yeah.
I like what Venom did where they said, oh, we're doing 250. All right, let's just stick with that number because that's a lot more fun and we'll just kind of keep going with that versus using the previous numbering. I think, I don't know, there's this idea of if you have Green Lantern 600, people will be like, oh boy, but I haven't read the previous 599. Yeah. I don't think that's true. I don't think anybody is going to be like, I have to read 599 issues of Green Lantern to understand this. I think you could just have the numbers and go forward from there. If you really are doing a new volume or a new story, for sure, go back to a new number one. But this whole idea of constantly doing a new number one every single year or 2 years is... That, I think, is more confusing than having the consistent number.
Definitely from someone who reads a lot of comics, because they're like, yeah, I think it was issue two. It was like, issue two? That was like 4 years ago. Yeah. Oh, right. There's been six number twos since then.
Yeah, I agree
Marvel, wait, just to wrap this up, Marvel just put out a thing for June's Spider-Man things, where they're like, issue 32 and 33 of Amazing Spider-Man, continuing the countdown to issue 1,000.
Yeah.
Somebody online on our account was like, boy, it's going to take them a while to get there.
That's a long countdown. Long walk to that.
It's tough. I do think, though, that, you know, if you're a new person walking into a comic book shop and you see issue 600, that is daunting a little bit. You know what I mean? So, like, I understand, but at the same time, it is kind of a little bit like, let's celebrate the fact that you've made it this far, you know?
Here's the thing, though. I'm more daunted when I'm like, oh, issue 7, if I haven't read the ones before that. Because I'm like, oh, there's only a little bit there, so that I'm definitely missing elements. When I see, like, issue 702, I'm like, well, let's just see what's going on.
I think it's, I mean, comics are often called a soap opera, and it's like a soap opera, right? Like, if you're like, I really want to get into One Life to Live, you're not be like, got to start with the episode that was first in the 1930s or whatever.
Sick reference, bro.
Oh, yeah, well, that's cool, Alex, but I'm doing a rewatch of 60 Minutes from the beginning so I can follow everything, and a lot of seasons.
Wow.
What are you up to, the Great Depression?
Yeah, it's pretty, it's a bummer. But man, I can't wait for
more.
Well,
the good news is it's all uphill on America from there.
Yeah, yikes. Exactly. Can't wait to see how it ends.
Yikes.
Anyway, I think we've done a good job of reviewing this and not just talking about
this landmark issue. Shouts to Kyle Rayner. That's the Green Lantern that over the years I've come to love. And we get some good Kyle Rayner stuff in here. So I'm loving it.
Yeah, DC's, we got a lot of big issues this week, which is cool. It's fun to celebrate. But, yeah, I thought this was a cool collection of stories, a nice celebration of the character. I wanted some Joe in there, though, as a Joe fan, so a little disappointed there.
She's over in Green Lantern Corps, so you can read her all about her there, as well as, obviously, Absolute Green Lantern.
Yes.
I do think it's interesting that this is the beginning of All in Act Two for Green Lantern, where we're refocusing on Kyle Rayner, and over the Flash, they're refocusing on Wally West, that both of those characters will be like, why don't we spend some time with the more fun guys rather than the less fun guys? What do you guys think about that? And I'm like, I like more fun than less fun. Thank you. So
that's good. Yeah, I mean, just reading like the, or looking at the page, the origin of Hal Jordan, and it's got like, Hal looking serious, and then Hal killing everyone. And then it's like, oh yeah, this guy has a pretty bummer past. So I'm with it. I'm with it. Moving to Kyle.
And I will say, I do like the idea of whatever is going on with Hal, where he's like lost in space somewhere with half of the Wonder Twins. That's fun. I'm into that.
So I do like what's happening with him.
Yeah. Uncanny X-Men number 25 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by David Marquez and Luciano Vecchio. In this issue, you're not going to believe this, Power Girl fucks the Punisher.
What?
Dude, it's crazy. I don't know how she got them to let her do that. Also,
what, are you jealous? Are you jealous?
Of who?
Power Girl. He's clearly jealous of Power Girl.
I heard actually this is running through all of DC and Marvel continuity that they're just going to like pop around, end up just totally shagging in the background.
Sweet.
Wait, can I say something? Pete, you were saying that I was jealous of Power Girl. Yes. I would like the Punisher to turn my guts into a war zone, Pete.
That's wow. Yeah, put it in your journal. First Already off, is. Great cover. Already this is a fun cover. Also sets us up nicely for the comic. Yeah, I like all the action in this. I'm excited to kind of see what's going on here. And I enjoyed the art as well.
Gail Simone really just cementing the Chris Claremont-ness nature of her run, like becoming the new Chris Claremont, which is great. Her stories are all over the place. And the dragon is reintroduced in every issue. And I'm like, we know him. He's been there the entire time. And he's always like, remember, you made a deal for the Eye of Agamotto. I'm like, I know that more than like what's going on in my wife's life. I'm so connected to the dragon's relationship with Gambit.
I will say this is my favorite arc so far. I think I said that with every issue of this, but I love the juxtaposition of the stories between the stories that's being told to the younger kids and also everybody else fighting a monster squad right out of Universal Monster movies. I thought that was very fun. I thought the kids stepping up to take them down was really cool as well.
Very cool.
This is great. I really enjoy this arc, really enjoyed this issue. I agree with you on the dragon. I'm like, okay, I get it. It's fine.
Also, I'm like, he's part of the team. He may as well move in. He's around.
But I'm also very intrigued. I wonder if it is going to have anything to do with the dragon. They are teasing that there's a secret that's been going on in the background about this team since the beginning, which I don't know if you guys read. Did you guys read Excalibur back in the day where it was like issue 50? They were like, oh, by the way. Something crazy was going, and they like twisted the whole reason the team got together.
Yes.
And I feel like talking about the Chris Claremont nature, I feel like she's going to do something like that. And I'm really excited to see what that is.
There definitely is something that there's a lurking just vibe underneath this whole series. 100%. And it's been there from the beginning. It felt like they just sort of landed in New Orleans, but there's just something like you're saying, there's something there and that's exciting.
Justin, did you feel very seen in this issue? We had a girl trapped in a well. I know you lived that well life. That had to be a real problem, you know?
We found a weirder bit than the Pantages Theater. As I told Pete once that I grew up on well water, so I had more cavities, and it blew his mind.
That's right.
But it wasn't a well like I was getting a bucket. I'm not a pioneer.
So it was a more advanced well, is what you say. You didn't have the crank to get the water, like the water would come up.
A lot of people, if you don't live in a city, you live in the sticks. You probably have a well.
I have a faucet where I get my water. I don't have
it. It comes
well.
Out of the faucet. It's just from a well rather than a pipe because I don't live in a city.
I don't know your well technology, man, all right? So I saw a well and immediately thought of you and I was like, oh, man, Justin must be so happy to get a well in this comic.
Every night I would make a wish to meet friends as good as you two.
But was it tough? Was it tough when you were like sitting out there in the field and then your dog would come running up to you and you're like, what is it? Someone fell down the well?
Yeah. It was. It was hard. And Al missed that pup every day. The ghost of that puppy still occasionally barks in the background of our podcast.
When somebody falls in the well, do you have to clean out the well before you can drink again?
Leave the corpse.
It's like an au jus. You know what I mean? It's really a nice flavor.
It's called a marinade. A marinade.
Beautiful. I've seen that episode of The Walking Dead. White Sky, number 2 from Image Comics, written by William Harms, art by J.P. Mavinga. So the first issue of this book was a huge hit, part of that slate of Image comic books that came out that were like new books, sold out immediately. We read it, and I think generally we're okay with the storytelling, appreciated the art style, but personally I found my mind to pull out a little bit by the fact that the concept was Ghost took over the world and made it snow constantly, because that was not clear for the first issue. Well, I'm here to tell you in the second issue that is still not clear.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening in this issue, in this comic. Like, it feels like, oh, it's a zombie apocalypse. And it's like, oh, it's not zombies. It's a ghost, sort of. But it feels like it's not just ghosts.
There's also some people chasing them. The thing that I thought was, I still like the art in this book, but when you have a relatively clear concept like ghosts cause it to snow, that's, I know I said this last issue, that's what you lead with. Like, that's your lead. You gotta hit that a bunch in your first arc so I understand what you're talking about.
Let me say also the idea of, like, you need a clear concept like ghosts make it snow. I'm like, let me stop you right there. what do you mean?
Well, this is what I'm saying, is like, if you have like my elevator pitch is like, what if you're in a world where ghosts make it snow? I'd be like, great, tell me more about that, and let's explore this world. So far, in the first issue, we've had what seemed like some flame ghosts. We have no ghosts in this issue, but we do have somebody who seems like he comes out of Barbarian, the movie from Zach Krieger, as well as a bunch of people who are rejects from Mad Max who are chasing this girl who lost her father and now has another father figure. So, I don't know. I know it seems like we're lumping on this book because, like, I want to understand what's going on here, but yeah. I am not.
Well, if I enjoyed this, yeah, when someone says ghosts snow, I just like, oh, yeah, because ghosts have crazy dandruff. Anytime ghosts are around, a lot of them, it just snows. That's just, you know, facts. People know that. But, yeah, I also think
Do they not have sheets, the ghost? Is it just, like...
That's rivulets, why they wear the sheets.
Rivulets of dandruff.
Yeah, if you don't have the sheets, that's why you're supposed to have sheets. Yeah, it's kind of a universal thing.
Covers up the dry skin, ghost skin.
Yeah. Ghost in the sheet, dandruff in the streets.
Yeah, that's what they say. Yep. I love the art in this. I love the action. And this was kind of like a horror movie to me where, like, they stop to rest. And I was like, don't stop to rest. They're going to fucking catch up. So, you know, I was kind of having fun yelling at this comic while I was reading it.
How long since the apocalypse happened are we in this comic? Do we have a defined? Because, like I know it, like, cannibalism is a fun thing to get to. But... whatever's happened, they are like, they have a cannibal shop. They're like a butcher shop of cannibal, of humans.
It's probably been like, what, 24, 48 hours, something like that.
It's just crazy because think about how that would work. You would have to start eating human. You'd have to have enough like-minded people around you. They're like, we need another human to eat. Oh, why don't you be the human butcher? And we're going to set you up downstairs where you're going to hang the meats. You're going to make the human chorizo, the gabagool. You got to get the hot. Let's grind up, get some human sausage. They have a butcher shop in this. So that takes time just socially to get to the point where you have a business around cutting up humans.
I hear what you're saying, Justin, but at the same time, hearing you describe this in such detail, you're making some compelling points that if the world falls, I come find you, you make me a nice human chorizo, you make me some gabagool, you've got it all figured out.
Yeah.
I will say that came right out of my mouth really fast. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
too much.
Yeah, I'm worried about you.
There was no delay.
Well, here's the thing. I like chorizo. I love a salted meat. And
where's your line, though, bro? You know what I mean?
I hope to find it someday, Pete. How far down off the road is your driveway?
Not far.
Unrelated question.
Yeah, not far. No. Huh.
Yeah. Iron Man number 3 from Marvel, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Carmen Carnero. Madam Mask and AIM are trying to create their own Tony Stark, and the real Tony Stark is on their trail, but first he has to get past MODOK, who is being attacked by a bunch of other folks. This comic book is a blast. I'm having a really great time with it. Joshua Williamson seems to be having a great time as well. MODOK out of his costume is really silly and weird.
Yeah.
And I love the paces that he's putting Tony through. It's really fun.
Yeah, I like the sort of the A to C thinking that happens here in a very sociopathic point of view. Like the idea that AIM is like, or Madame Mask is like, here's how we're going to make the next Tony Stark. We need to put these kids who are smart in the same situation and one of them will emerge. And then her next level in this issue is like, we need to get Tony Stark so close to the edge of dying that he comes up with another fucked up invention that we can steal from him. Like, that's just very smart and slightly terrifying thinking.
Yeah, it's super scary. But I enjoyed this comic. I thought, the MODOK stuff was really fun. The Pepper Potts kind of busting them on a date was fun. Yeah, I think that the kind of messed up place where they left Tony Stark and the tune in next time to see what happens is kind of a fun thing. So, yeah, I thought this was really solid.
The Peril of the Brutal Dark, an Ezra Kane mystery number 2 from DC Vertigo, written by Chris Constan, art by Jacob Phillips. We are getting a sort of old-timey noir detective who is stuck in a very Indiana Jones-type situation. Pete, you seem pretty psyched about it, so take it away.
Yeah, I love your description. It's got such a great vibe to it. It feels old school, but it's so warm and kind of welcoming. Just such a great tone and feel to this comic. Amazing colors. I love the twists and turns that are happening in the story. It's a fun kind of mystery that we're riding along with, getting information as each kind of book goes on. So, yeah, I'm kind of really having a blast with the setup and the execution of this. It's a great team that really knows what they're doing.
It's just written with pure confidence. The art, like you said, Pete, the colors in this are just beautifully done. It's so atmospheric. It's like a classic, like, dark Spielberg-y feel to it. Like, it's just really great. Everything about this is an epitome comic if you are out there looking for something to dive into.
Nice.
The Punisher, number 2 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Jose Luis Soares. In this issue, while Jigsaw is building his case to try to destroy the Punisher, the Punisher might be destroying himself as he has a massive brain injury that he and Microchip are trying to deal with. Pete, a couple of people called you out on the live show for not picking the Punisher as one of the things you were excited about coming out this week.
They were like, hey, what the heck, man? Don't you have to like every Punisher comic that comes out? The answer is no. No, I don't.
You weirdly don't.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I'm riding with this because I'm excited to see what's going to eventually happen. Because right now, it's Frank's in a lot of pain. I don't like to see that. Microchip is trying to help, but he's more hungry than helpful in this issue. And the doctor is kind of a dick. He just throws pills and runs away. I was like, classic doctor move. So
My doctor does that.
It's one of these things where I want to get more excited about the Punisher, but we don't really have enough to get excited for. That doesn't mean it won't get there, but right now we're kind of building towards something. Frank has got something wrong with his head. He's not in control. And after a scan, the doctor is like, it looks just like you a fucked up army veteran who's lived through a lot of shit. So, sorry, he's a Marine. I shouldn't say Army, but anyways, I just think that it will hopefully get there, and I'm excited for it to get there. So far so good.
I was on board when Power Girl faked her orgasm in Katz's deli.
Dare you?
And then the older woman said, I'll have what she's having, and the Punisher shot her head off? That was unnecessary, but it turns out she was running a human chorizo shop out of Katz's deli. So she's the real criminal.
That explains the lines around the block.
Oh, my God.
Yes, oh, man. Everyone loves it. What a reveal. I don't know. Everyone's so unhappy in this comic. The Punisher's like, my brain. Microchip is like, I need a job. I want to be your guy. I'm like, Microchip, invest in NVIDIA or get a job with an AI company.
It's up for AI. I don't know if you guys saw the news about OpenAI losing the deal with Disney. that's like a minor hiccup going on right now with AI, because like it's the future, honestly.
What just happened? Did you just give a tech talk?
Someone have a gun to your head?
Yeah.
Does Sam Altman have a gun to your head?
Yep. I have a question about Jigsaw's masks. Mm-hmm. So he's been putting on these fake faces, and I think we talked about this with the last issue too.
Face off, you take the face off.
The way Jose Luis Soares draws it though is he's like, just tearing. Yeah. It's like I don't know what it is made out of, because it seems like he's tearing skin off each time. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, when you really, and Justin knows this, as a classically trained actor. Yeah. When you were taking on a role, you really become this person. So when you're ripping off the face, you're kind of ripping off this person's belief.
Oh, it's an emotional pain.
Yeah, exactly. Saying. Yeah, yeah. It's not just the pain of, ripping off your skin, so to speak,
I think he used, and this is a common mistake, too much spirit gum when he was attaching the mask to his face. Mm-hmm. I've torn off a lot of fake mustaches.
Yeah, spirit gum can,
It's crazy that spirit gum is still how you attach a mustache to your face. Mm-hmm. That stuff is like putting straight up super glue onto your bare skin.
Yeah.
Have you guys used spirit gum lately?
Oh, not lately, no. But
yeah, when was the last sketch show you've been in?
Me?
Been a little while. World Tree, number 19.
I know, Justin,
from
you
Image
perform
Comics.
Regularly. I was just
I'm out there still.
Yeah, you are.
But Alex, I saw an Elephant Larry sketch was just making the rounds on the internet recently.
No.
It was.
I know which one it was. Is it set in a doctor's office, Justin?
Tell us what's going on.
Oh, my God.
No, I'd prefer not to. Let's just move on. I think we can move on and talk about this wonderful comic book.
I was actually talking about the car alarm sketch, but I don't know what.
Oh, really?
I'm curious what you're talking about.
Oh, okay. There is a sketch that we did with Elephant Larry back in the day that, in retrospect, is not great. I mean, I think the sketch is fine, but some of the words we use maybe should not be used. At the time, it was okay.
Yeah.
Now it's not okay. Actually, now it's fine again, so it's all good. Anyway, it gets passed around, and every once in a while, people send it to me or one of the other guys in Elephant Larry, be like, hey, we see your sketch out loud. We were like, please don't send that to us.
It's great.
Yeah. World Tree number 19 from Image Comics, written by James Todd IV, art by Fernando Blanco. In this issue, we're checking in with a lot of characters and a lot of stuff is going on. I got to tell you, I'm like 50-50 on this title, where one issue I'm like, oh, man, that was great and really terrifying. And then we get an issue like this where I'm like, I don't remember who these people are.
Well, the tone shifts a bit. Like, we're into like a big crime vibe in this one, like sort of military and all this. And espionage, and I was like, oh, it's sort of cool, but I was like, I don't remember this being a part of the book. And at the end, I was like, oh,
you're
this
like,
is
oh,
awesome.
The naked lady. You're like, I remember her.
Well, I remember, believe me, I remember her. But the part at the scene at the end, I thought was really well done. And,
Yeah, that it's last well done. And
the
it's
last panel
drawn.
Is unbelievable. That's a hell of a last panel to leave it on. Yeah. It was so, I mean, just you want to talk about the depth of a panel, Justin. The stuff kind of going on throughout that whole thing is really impressive.
Yeah.
And it's just hard to track all of these characters over the course of however long this book has been coming out. It's one that demands close reading and close attention, and I don't know. That's all.
Also, when I see the title, I'm like, is it World 33? And then I'm like,
it's actually
World Tree.
Zero World 33.
And part of my brain wants to be like, is it trying to say World Trade? But that's not what it's trying to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a shame you can't get past the title, because the book really takes off after that.
Yeah, after you get past that. But yeah, I do think that it is impressive. You can't read this in public with a naked lady, but the art is really intense.
No, you can read it with a naked lady. Same thing.
Yeah. She'd be like, oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
She's like me.
Yeah.
First time I saw myself on screen.
Who are you doing?
Alex and I have a mutual friend who's a nudist.
Okay. Oh, all right.
She's sort of like a Mrs. Doubtfire type, but naked.
Great.
No weddings.
I'm sure she is not our ex-husband. That's one thing I'm sure
of. Our mutual ex-husband. Yes. Yeah, that's the same thing that Sally Field thought until the reveal. Until she jinxed on her mask off.
I'm not done with the movie. No spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. It ends fine. She, Robin Williams just keeps living like her forever.
Oh, dude. Rest in peace, Robin Williams.
Dimensional Rivals, number 3 from Marvel by Peach Momoko, Elena Casagrande, Bengal, and Mike Del Mundo. This is about Peach Momoko's riff on Psylocke, who comes from, I guess, kind of ancient Japan, Ronin era Japan. And she is falling through dimensions because of Galacta to pick up the Infinity Stones. And every time she falls into a new dimension, it's a new situation and a new writer artist who is taking it on. We talked about this one a little bit on the live show, but man, this is just a gorgeous book. And the thing that struck me while reading this issue, beyond that, each of these dimensions is very fun in their own way, and I would love to explore more of them, is this is sort of part of the fact, Marvel playing off the fact that one of the big drivers to comic book stores right now, beyond the absolute universe for DC, is actually Marvel Rivals. Like, Marvel Rivals is actually bringing people into comic book stores, which explains a lot of the Marvel Rivals collections of the digital comics that they're doing, why they're doing so much Jeff the Land Shark stuff, because he's a big hit on Marvel Rivals. That's also why they're doing this comic book. And not to go in the other direction, but if Marvel Rivals was more like this, I would be all in on Marvel Rivals. Because one of the things that actually like holds me up for the game is I don't like the visual. I don't like the look of it. The characters are a little too chunky and weird to me. But this is gorgeous. This is
chunky,
fun.
How dare you?
They are. They're like, they're beefed out. They're all roided out.
Ah, there's nothing better than beef, man. Can I just, I know we're already kind of in crazy town, but I just wanted to say, like, when you were talking, Zelvin, I could have sworn you were going to break out into song because you were like, Psylocke comes from, and I thought you were going to be like, from the land down under, I don't know. It seemed like you were setting it up because you were like, comes from, and then I was like, he's going up, he's going to do it.
Doesn't go down though. Come from a land down under. It goes down. It doesn't go up. Oh, you tricked me, you son of a bitch.
Gotcha.
I can't believe it.
Well, look at him laugh.
Oh my god, that was so great. Oh man.
Did Pete actually pull a fast one on Alex?
He pulled a fast one.
Oh my god. Wow. Oh man. Oh, I'm done for the day. All right. I do love these stories. It's hard because the art is so great, but you're also just kind of waiting for the Peach Momoko art as well. So I kind of feel a little bit bad, but man, the way this comic starts and is such a great cool look, and it feels fresh and new, and it's fun to kind of see these characters kind of getting taken and pushed in different ways. So yeah,
I just love the art jam nature of it. Like it's sort of a Dream Logic story, like a lot of Peach Momoko stuff, but this really works. I think the flow is really nice.
Star Trek, The Last Starship, number 6 from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Adrian Bonilla. This is the end of the second arc of the title, and we are finally sort of finding out what's been going on with this resurrected Captain Kirk, or at least getting closer to understanding what's going on and what he is all about. And it's not quite what you think, particularly as the Federation has fallen apart and is replaced by the Emerald Chain, which fans of Star Trek will know eventually paves the way for basically like criminal organizations and is no good for the universe. And that's what our crew knows is going to happen and are trying to stop. I've been on board with this title since the beginning, but what did you guys think about this issue?
Yeah, it just continues to be great. I mean, some epic panels in here. I mean, the page layouts where you got the ship, and then they're kind of like panels that are circling the ship, was just such a cool idea and well executed. Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about space, I want these epic shots that makes you feel like you're really out there and kind of in the mix. So, yeah, I was just artistically, it's really impressive, but also story-wise, this continues to be really solid. Even if you kind of like Star Trek, you're going to love this comic. It's really impressive what they're doing here.
Hmm. Yeah, I think this is really capturing like a trippy 60s vibe with the art. The color palette's really strong and vibrant. I feel like I need to go watch some Star Trek to learn about this era, because I don't know anything about it. And it feels like an exciting time in
the Star
Trek.
Here's the thing, is they've never done anything with the Byrne. They only touched on it in Star Trek Discovery, but only to kind of like talk about it. If I recall correctly, on Discovery, they were like, yeah, and the burn happened. You see a bunch of explosions as a flashback, and that's pretty much it. So this is untouched, this area.
Yeah. Right. But I just haven't. I feel reading this, I'm like, I feel like I'm just behind. And I haven't, because I haven't finished Discovery and all of those. I'm just lost. I was feeling content guilt on this one.
Oh, Fantastic Four number 9, content guilt.
Oh man.
We're not being caught up on everything.
Stars and Gardens.
No, I know. It's just a very modern problem to have.
I'm very modern.
Yeah.
Especially my problems.
Yes. From Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Umberto Ramos. This is continuing the Invincible Woman arc, which is about... It's not a Invisible Woman from an alternate dimension. The conceit here is that on a long enough timeline, the same thing could potentially happen in two different places. And here are the Fantastic Four developed on another planet on the opposite side of the universe. And their Invisible Woman became much more powerful and also lobotomized, so she doesn't feel good or evil anymore. She is attacking our Fantastic Four, leading to an absolutely horrifying sequence in the middle here, where she tries to lobotomize our Sue Storm. Man, this is a very different mode than we've been getting from Fantastic Four, but I think it works. Like, just the tension is through the roof here.
I loved this, like, and especially talking, we had Ryan North on the live show, like we said, and he talking to him where we're like, yeah, you're the fun science guy. And this was the scariest sequence of the week for me, is when the Invincible Woman is turning layers of Sue's skull invisible,
dude,
so that
crazy.
She can cut out her moral scent of her brain to make her into her. And it looks like she does it a little bit or is almost doing it. I was like, whew.
Yeah,
really breathtaking. And I like, this is one of the first in the new run that is like an ongoing. It's not a standalone, right? So like, it was nice.
Also, Umberto Ramos's art is just absolutely fantastic. And what's kind of cool is you got this. His art is a little bit more cartoony. I hate to say that because I don't want it to seem like an insult.
It's exaggerated.
Thank you. So, like, to have such graphic things happen and then his art be at the center of it, it's such an interesting combination that is really impressive and gives it a whole kind of another level. But, man, some fucked up shit happens in this comic book. But, man, the art is just so glorious.
Death Fight Forever, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Andrew McLean, art by Alexis Zirit, Al Goffa, Sam McKenzie, and Erwin Pompa. This is a mix of Masters of the Universe, G.I. Joe, Street
Come
Fighter,
on.
And a bunch of other
Come
things.
Come on.
And here we're dealing with the fallout of the crazy stuff that happened in the first issue, where one of the basically like Double Dragon, Ryu, and... Ken from Street Fighter, brothers, one of them died, and now the other one is a drunken lout who doesn't want to deal with his life. Meanwhile, the Pythana, would you say, Pete?
Or... Sure, yeah, it's a kind of cobra-looking villain.
Yeah, cobra-looking villain gets hurt, they team up, so stuff going down. Pete, what'd you think about this issue?
This is just an 80s blast. This is just so much fun. Yeah, I just I love the look of this. I love the feel of it, the colors, the way the art is just kind of, it's such a vibe, such a tone, such a cool thing that brings me back to a happy place. And yeah, they're popping eyeballs in this. This is crazy. Yeah, I think that I'm all for this. This is just hits a lot of spots for me and really kind of brings a lot of fun together. So I'm really impressed with the look and feel of this comic.
When I was reading this, I was imagining Pete doodling it in his Trapper Keeper.
Yes, dude. Yes.
It feels very much like when Pete should have been listening to his his biology lesson. He was actually just doodling this comic on line paper. But yeah, same thing. Like the moment when the eyeball is like plunked out of the eye socket, I was like, oh, it's just so good. And it is so... so classic feeling, a classic 80s feeling. It's really nice.
Generation X-23, number 2 from Marvel, written by Jody Hauser, art by Jacopo Comagni. This is following X-23, who has encountered a new series of mutants who she thought were going to be tortured and experimented on, but seem to actually be kind of okay.
They're chill. They're hanging.
Crazy
not
numbers.
Not to start off on a dour note, but I do want to mention that after this, for almost immediately after the first issue of this was released, Jacopo Comagni sadly passed away, after some heart surgery. This is one of the last works that he's going to be doing. So I will say it's a particular bummer reading this because his art is great.
And art is awesome. Yes. Yeah,
and in particular, really like the character designs. I was thinking about a lot while I was reading this. Like, there's a lot of attempts to make new mutant characters, and these look cool.
In comparing this to what's happening in Uncanny X-Men, where Gail Simone has really gone out of her way to craft new mutants that we get to follow. And it feels like this is at the beginning of that same track. Like, in this issue, I really like we're getting to know these characters. They don't feel like disposable mutants. It feels like these characters could ride for a long time. And so I hope the series can continue, and RIP Jacopo.
Yeah. Rest in peace. Yeah. It's kind of this interesting idea of, you know, if they kept the experiments going, like how many numbers is there? And there's like an infinity guy. And
there's so many numbers.
There's so many numbers. It's like,
did you know that Green Lantern's on issue 600 sort of?
Yeah. Yeah. I did.
That's almost crazy. Insurmountable.
Yeah.
That's
I mentioned earlier in the podcast that I wanted to go to college for theater and math. And I decided not to do math because I was like, too many numbers. I can't handle this.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's recap stuff from earlier in the podcast. I think people really
enjoy
recap
that. Numbers. 602, 603.
I do love this comic, and I like this team. It's great to see X-23 kind of handling her business in this, and I really think that this is enjoyable, and RIP.
Are you ever worried that we catch up to present time with our recap? You know, and we're just recapping what's actually happening?
That would be crazy if you were saying something about recapping what's presently happening.
Oh my God, you imagine that? Oh, the worst. Hey, Justin, I'm excited to hear what your thoughts are on this next comic.
Pete, recapping the future.
Uh-oh, we moved ahead.
No, Department of Truth,
number 36 from Image Comics, written by James Todd IV, art by Ben Temple Smith. This issue, we're focusing on dinosaurs and religion and Ben Temple Smith being on the book, which seems like a perfect fit to me.
I mean, I said this a little bit, but this issue then came true after I read it, that it just feels so present. There's a whole section here about war and how media changed war. Yeah. In World War II, it was about the stories that came home. And then once we had cameras at war, everything got much worse for everyone. There was no glory. It was just negative. And then it became almost like selling. This book just lays out all this stuff, and it feels like there should be a page in this about what's happening literally right now. It just feels so present and upsetting, but just really, you come out of reading this with so many thoughts.
Yeah.
You also have thoughts, Pete?
Yeah,
it's too many.
Justin's the Department of Truth guy, so I defer to him. But yeah, tripped out amazing art, a story that is way over my head, but I'm glad Justin gets it.
And there we go. That is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic. Cut out. We love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah. Oh, hello, Alex. I am your ex-husband, the Punisher.
Oh, no. Bring that war zone to my guts.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.